following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. It is, what day is today? Oh, it's Wednesday. You know, whenever we have a holiday week, everything gets thrown off, but we're further along than, you know, I knew, and that's a good thing. Welcome to it. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live, as we do every weekday afternoon, 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Our home base is NicoleSandler.com. We have the Listen Live page where you can get the video, audio streams, links to the other video streams, a chat room, you know, and everything your heart could desire, I guess. Kind of, sort of. Of course, after that, the show is available for you to listen whenever, wherever you want, whether it be the audio podcast or one of the video archives. You know, I tweet out the show right at the beginning of the show every day, and the tweet that I send out has the show contained in it. Isn't that handy? So that after it ends, that tweet has the video of the program. You know, what a far cry from the early days of radio. Not that I was around in the early days of radio, mind you. It just feels that way sometimes. But yeah, this is the new world of radio, I suppose. Anyway, so much is happening. Again, it's just a busy time. You know, I got it yesterday. I went through a whole litany of things that was yesterday. It was the 1st of June. It was, hold on, I'm pulling up my list so I don't forget anything. So it was the first day of June, right? It was, and of course, I think I closed that window. Okay, so it was the first, now I'm going to have to do it from memory. First day of June, first day of hurricane season. It was the, of course, the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa race massacre, which is the correct terminology for what it was. You know, it was a lot of stuff yesterday. And what I didn't realize until after the show ended was that yesterday was also the anniversary of it was a year ago that protesters were peacefully hanging out in Lafayette Square across from the White House, doing what protesters have done there forever, for certainly as long as I've been alive, peacefully protesting. When the police came in and cleared out the place with tear gas and rubber bullets and stuff, all so that the orange idiot could walk through the cleared out park across the street to the church and stand there like an idiot with a Bible in his hand upside down. What the purpose of that was, I still don't know to this day. But, you know, we're talking about the former guy who nothing he ever did or said made sense. So there is no, you know, rhyme or reason behind that. But the fact is that yesterday was a year. Wow. I remember that day so clearly, and it doesn't seem like a year ago. I mean, it's on one hand, it seems like a lifetime ago. On the other hand, it seemed like it just happened. But that was, you know, a good almost 6 months before Election Day. So we knew we still had to go through it with that guy. Ugh. And it was just so distasteful. Sorry, I get this look on my face when I even think about him. But in going back and thinking about this, you know, I was thinking about the lying, because the lying is endemic. And it's not only to the Trumpers, because we learned on Monday when we went back to 2014 and listened to a show, the Bush administration was almost equally adept at lying, but the volume wasn't as large, right? But they lied. They certainly lied. But Trump is in a, you know, his own category, I think, when it comes to saying shit that's simply not true. So anyway, I went back. So today we learned all of a sudden, a year later, they finally admit that tear gas was used. I'm going to play for you just a clip. Breonna Keeler, who I've become a big fan of hers. I like her on CNN. Something else to watch. than Morning Joe. If you're like stuck on MSNBC, there's a better show on CNN in the morning, and you don't have to listen to the morning jerk idiots, and you don't have to listen to, I guess they had John Bolton on this morning. I don't know. And a lot of people left. Breonna Keeler is now doing mornings on CNN. Anyway, so she brought up the fact yesterday that it was the first anniversary of that event, that horrible clearing of Tahrir Square. Wow, that's a Freudian slip of Lafayette Square. Whoa. Anyway, here's how she led off the segment that she reported on it.
Today marks 1 year since Donald Trump's infamous photo op at St. John's Church at the height of the nationwide George Floyd protests. Further proof that one of his biggest lies about that day does not pass the smell test. The D.C. police, through an attorney, finally admitting that law enforcement used tear gas that day against peaceful protesters. You'll recall that June day last year, police cleared demonstrators from Lafayette Square so that Trump could walk over, hold up a Bible in front of the church that had been damaged the night before, and say cheese.
Yeah, and say cheese. But they wouldn't admit that tear gas was used. Today or yesterday, they finally did. But this, at that time, the White House press secretary was a woman named Kayleigh McEnany. And here's how she answered that question.
The White House president and his team had to do it all over again. Would you have gassed and pummeled protesters to clear the park so the president could have a photo op?
So let me first address, no tear gas was used and no rubber bullets were used. So again, no tear gas was used, no rubber bullets were used.
Yeah, sorry.
Bullshit.
Yeah, and she wasn't the only one saying it. You can't forget this.
They didn't use tear gas. There's so much fake news. Most news is fake. They're corrupt and they're fake.
Those comments on Fox where he had backup.
There was never any tear gas.
So they threw some smoke bombs out and pushed them back. Wow. Armageddon, really?
No, it was tear gas and rubber bullets. It was ugly and nasty. And yet Breonna Keeler came up with a new term for what they engaged in back then. That
bullshit.
The bullshit session, the lies, it's called
tear gas lighting at its worst.
Tear gas lighting. Boom. Perfect. So that happened. So whatever happened to that hot mess? Nothing. And in fact, oh God, I didn't pull this. There was a story that crossed, my desktop. News comes just so fast and furious these days. But there was a story how the Justice Department, the Biden Justice Department, I'm going to see if I can find it because I want to share this with you. The Biden Justice Department said they're not going to file any charges over that. No charges Lafayette Square clearing. Let's see if this comes up with anything. Because, yep, here it is. This was 5 days ago. Department of Justice asks the judge to dismiss lawsuits against Trump for the violent clearing of Lafayette Square. Are you kidding me? We know what happened that day. Here, I'm reading from Slate. And again, this just happened a few days ago over the holiday weekend, which is why it slipped my mind until just this very moment. The Justice Department is calling on a federal judge to dismiss lawsuits filed against the former president, the orange idiot, along with former Attorney General Bill Barr and other officials over the forceful removal of protesters from a park near the White House. The American Civil Liberties Union, Black Lives Matter, other civil liberties groups, and individual protesters all accused Trump and other senior officials in his administration of being responsible for the now infamous events of June 1st, 2020. But Trump and other officials are immune from civil lawsuits having to do with police action taken to protect the president. I'm sorry, that wasn't taken to protect the president. That was taken to clear out the square so that he could walk through it. That's not protecting the president, but that's what the DOJ lawyers are saying. Plus, They say the lawsuit should be tossed because Trump is out of office and the new administration is unlikely to repeat what happened last year, considering President Joe Biden has a very different view of the racial justice movement than his predecessor did. This is what worries me, that it's going to be, you know, one after another, the charges are just going to be dropped. I'm sorry, that day, that was an assault on the American people, on the Constitution, because we do have a right to peacefully protest, and they forcefully evacuated the park, the square, and did it with tear gas and live ammunition. And the DOJ just dropped it. I got to tell you, Merrick Garland is everything I thought he would be so far. I know, I've been holding back and not criticizing, but so far, I am not very impressed with the Merrick Garland Justice Department. Gotta say, not at all. Not happy at all. All right. So after that, because I'm feeling my blood pressure rise, we can use something to cheer us up a little bit, right? I must share with you a video I just saw. You know, it is graduation season, right? And there's nothing like a gutsy high school senior who thumbs her nose at the authoritarian practices of her school. So, in Texas, Lake Highlands High School valedictorian, her name is Paxton Smith. She switched out her approved speech to, I guess, speak from the heart. Oh my goodness, I can't wait for you to hear what this very, very brave young woman did. Hold on, I gotta fix the picture because she's gonna be cut off if I don't. Anyway, so again, just keep in mind this is in Texas. Yeah, so it sounds like a small town in Texas, and Miss Paxton, again, is the valedictorian. I was going to tell you about the law they just went into effect in Texas. I'll tell you about it afterwards, but just to give you some context here, there's a new heartbeat law in Texas. Went into effect, how long ago was it? Not very long ago. Last week. And it's one of the nation's strictest abortion measures, banning the procedure as early as 6 weeks into the pregnancy. So the governor of Texas, you know, the same guy who's going to sign that or wants to sign that horrific voter suppression law, and he was stopped by the Democrats in the state legislature walking out and keeping them from getting a quorum so that they couldn't vote on it. So that's the state we're talking about. They have a new, very new heartbeat law that says once a heartbeat is present, it could be as early as 6 weeks, you cannot have an abortion. All right. Obviously, well, I'll just leave it at that. And let's listen to Paxton Smith deliver what was not the approved valedictorian speech. We're only going to hear about a minute of it, but that's all you really need. Take it away, Paxton.
I have dreams and hopes and ambitions. Every girl graduating today does. And we have spent our entire lives working towards our future. Mm-hmm. And without our input and without our consent, our control over that future has been stripped away from us. I am terrified that if my contraceptives fail, I am terrified that if I am raped, ooh, then my hopes and aspirations and dreams and efforts for my future will no longer matter. I hope that you can feel how gut-wrenching that is. I hope you can feel how dehumanizing it is to have the autonomy over your own body taken away from you. And I cannot give up this platform to promote complacency and peace when there is a war on my body and a war on my rights.
Wow.
A war on the rights of your mothers.
Yes.
A war on the rights of your sisters. A war on the rights of your daughters. We cannot stay silent.
You go, girl. Oh, my goodness. How great was that? Paxton Smith, valedictorian at this high school, at Lake Highlands High School in Texas. She switched out her approved speech to talk about abortion rights. Yeah, and I got to tell you, one of the most hypocritical things that the Republicans are doing now is they're talking regarding vaccines. Your body, your choice. They're trying to usurp the language of our choice, our bodies, our choice, to say it's your body. It's between you and your doctor. Nobody else has any say in, you know, what you have to put in your body. Hello? But, you know, they're hypocrites and that's all they care about. This woman, good for her. Now, I got to say, somebody just on Twitter said to me, can Miss Smith, hold on, can we replace Kyrsten Sinema with Miss Smith? She's not old enough. You have to be 30 years old to be a U.S. senator. But I think she's headed in the right direction. Now, speaking of Kyrsten Sinema, oh, my God, this woman is an idiot. And unfortunately, she's not up for reelection until 2024. So we're stuck with her. And the reason I bring her up now is, number one, she still hasn't answered why she didn't show up on Friday to cast her vote in to create a 9/11, a January 6th commission. She just didn't show up that day. Oh, she had a family thing. Sorry, not good enough. But so she was at somewhere, I guess today, with John Cornyn, because, you know, she hangs out with Republicans. Those are her peeps. So she's with John Cornyn at somewhere, I don't know. And a reporter asks her, you know, again about the filibuster, because she doesn't understand what the filibuster is. She really doesn't. And here's proof. So, sorry, here's video of Kyrsten Sinema. Yeah, well, just listen. Here we go. Oops. There.
Well, as folks in Arizona know, I've long been a supporter of the filibuster because it is a tool that protects the democracy of our nation.
No, it doesn't.
Rather than allowing our country to ricochet wildly every 2 to 4 years back and forth between policies.
What?
The idea of the filibuster was created by those who came before us in the United States Senate to create comity.
Bullshit.
And to encourage senators to find bipartisanship. And
bullshit.
And while there are some who don't believe that bipartisanship is possible,
yeah,
I think that I'm a daily example that bipartisanship
is
possible.
No, you are not.
Not just this trip today and tomorrow that John and I are
doing.
But
John Cornyn.
But the work that John and I and many other of my colleagues in both parties do on
not
a regular
both parties.
Basis. So to those who say we must make a choice between the filibuster and X, I say this is a false choice.
You're a
the
false choice.
The reality is that when you have a system that's not working effectively, and I would think that most would agree that the Senate's not a
particularly
well-oiled machine.
Hello? Right? Because of the filibuster.
The way to fix that is to change your behavior.
Oh, shut up. I have a song for her. You know, somebody really needs to educate Kyrsten Sinema. Maybe she needs a little history refresher. I pulled out my trusty little pocket constitution. Oh, here it is. I always have one nearby. Nowhere in this document does the word filibuster appear. And in fact, the only time it talks about the Senate needing some kind of a supermajority is when it comes to impeaching, to convicting a president who's been impeached. That's the only time a supermajority is needed. Other than that, it's majority rules. That's how everybody else, every other government on earth works. It's a majority rule. This 60 votes, this was somebody's made up thing. It's not in the Constitution. That is what broke the Senate. And having the filibuster in there, requiring, and this is something that Mitch McConnell put into effect, because they didn't used to invoke the filibuster every time a bill came up. So that's what broke the Senate. And the Senate was never really right in the first place. You know, the fact that South Dakota has two senators, and North Dakota has two senators, and the state of California has two senators, shows you how broken it is. Because North Dakota and South Dakota together, the population of those two states combined into one, doesn't even come close to the population of the city of Los Angeles. Yet they have equal say, double say, really, because they split the Dakota territories. So double the juice in D.C. than the state of California does. That's broken. And when something's broken, you fix it. And she is standing in the way of that. She and Joe Manchin. And it's not only that. I mean, aside from the fact that you have two alleged Democratic senators actively working against the agenda to help the American people that the president is trying to put into place. What did I get wrong now? Supermajority is required to override a veto. You're right. But not to pass legislation. You're right. For impeachment and to override a veto. He is correct. Sorry. Sometimes I, you know, think before I say. You're right. Supermajority is needed to override a veto. But that's it. In any other instance, majority rules. And that's how the Senate was designed. The same as the House. In the House, the winning team just needs one more vote than the losing side. That's how it works. But the Senate doesn't work. It's broken, and we need to fix it. Yeah. So, all right, coming up, that's not all that's broken, right? Our democracy is broken, and it's broken with an assist from today's Republican Party, who's doing everything they can to break it even further. They don't care about governing. They don't care about helping constituents. All they care about is retaining power, or in this case, regaining power. Joe Biden, I got to tell you, and I mentioned it yesterday, in the last few days, delivered a few powerful speeches. So on Monday, Memorial Day, he was at Arlington Cemetery, and most of his speech dealt with, you know, what Memorial Day is supposed to be about, honoring the military soldiers, active duty soldiers who are killed in battle. That's what Memorial Day is. Years ago, I did a thing when I was doing music radio. I thought I'd play all, you know, artists who died on Memorial Day. I thought that was cool. And boy, a couple of people really yelled at me because it's not about musicians. It's about, you know, our soldiers who were lost in battle. Okay, I'm sorry. I think of Memorial Day. I think about honoring those who have gone on before us. Anyway, Joe Biden used the occasion at Arlington to bemoan the state of affairs today and talk about the fact that our democracy is in peril. So here is just a little sliver of that speech.
The mission falls to each of us, each and every day. Democracy itself is in peril. Here at home and around the world, what we do now, how we honor the memory of the fallen will determine whether or not democracy will long endure. Democracy thrives when the infrastructure of democracy is strong. When people have the right to vote freely and fairly and conveniently. When a free and independent press pursues the truth founded on facts, not propaganda. When the rule of law applies equally and fairly to every citizen, regardless of where they come from, what they look like.
Right. And we know that that's not our history. The rule of law does not apply to everyone equally and fairly. That's the goal. But it wasn't in the day of this Constitution. You know, back here, African Americans, they were 3/5 of a person. You know, women didn't have the right to vote when this was written. In fact, men didn't either. You had to be a property owner. So things change. The Constitution was meant to be a living, breathing document, amended as you go along, fix things that don't make sense.
But, you know, we are now, so not only have we not treated people equally, as a nation, we have lied about what we've done to our own citizens. And that was nowhere more apparent than yesterday, which was the 100th anniversary of the massacre in Tulsa, the race massacre in Tulsa. And Joe Biden went there, first president ever to not only commemorate the atrocity, but to admit that it even happened, to say, yes, this happened. We see you. This country was wrong. We were wrong. And he gave another beautiful, eloquent speech. But he also, you know, used those events to draw parallels to what's happening today. Here's a few little clips from that speech. Whoops, here we go.
This sacred right is under assault with incredible intensity. Like
talking
I've
about
never
the
seen,
vote here.
With an intensity and an aggressiveness that we've not seen in a long, long time. It's simply un-American.
Yes,
I
the attacks on the vote.
Voting rights
talking
groups
about.
In this country to begin to redouble their efforts now. Earlier this year, the House of Representatives passed For the People Act to protect our democracy. The Senate will take it up later this month, and I'm going to fight like heck with every tool at my disposal for its passage. The House is also working in the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which is critical to providing
yes,
new
is.
Legal tools
yes, it
to combat
is.
The new assault on the right to vote. To signify the importance of our efforts, today I'm asking Vice President Harris to help these efforts and lead them among her many other responsibilities. With her leadership and your support, we're going to overcome again.
And so he put this on Kamala Harris's plate. This is the voting, the assault on our right to vote. But he kept going. Here's a little bit more about that.
More Americans voted in the last election than any in the midst of a pandemic than any election in American history.
More people than ever before.
You got voters registered. You got voters to the polls. The rule of law held. Democracy prevailed. We overcame. But today, let me be unequivocal. I've been engaged in this work my whole career, and we're going to be ramping up our efforts to overcome again. I will have more to say about this at a later date, a truly unprecedented assault on our democracy. An effort to replace nonpartisan election administrators and to intimidate those charged with tallying and reporting the election results. But today, as for the act of voting itself, I urge voting rights groups in this country to begin to redouble their efforts now to register and educate voters.
Yes, please.
In June should be a month of action on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
I hear all the folks on TV saying, why doesn't Biden get this done? Well, because Biden only has a majority of effectively four votes in the House and a tie in the Senate.
Uh-huh.
With two members of the Senate who vote more with my Republican friends.
Oh, slam.
I'm giving up.
Yeah. So that little dig at the end, apparently in today's White House press briefing, Jen Psaki was asked about that. And she said, oh, he was referring to something, the media. You know how he said, here, let me pull this up. He said,
I hear all the folks on TV saying, why didn't Biden get this done?
Yeah.
Well, because Biden only has a majority of effectively four votes in the House.
Yeah, this isn't the media. This is him. Yeah.
With two members of the Senate who vote more with my Republican friends.
Yeah, I thought that bore repeating again. So, that part, sorry, is not blamed on the media. Jen Psaki taking a little bit of, poetic license there. But, I'm glad he called them out because he needed to. They are not trying to save democracy. They are continuing the assault on it by allowing this stuff to go on in the Senate. Before we bring on our guest, Harvey J.K., I see him getting already in the Zoom room. One more thing I want to tell you about, because so there's this big assault on our voting rights. And thankfully, and Joe Biden talked about it in no uncertain terms yesterday. But where this assault is coming from is Nut Job City, I mean, these people are crazy. And so there was, over the holiday weekend, a QAnon convention. Seriously, in Texas, figures. And that's where Michael Flynn basically answered a question. I'm not going to play it again. I played it yesterday. It's someone who said, we need a, what do you say, Myanmar kind of reaction. He meant Myanmar. A military coup. And he said to Flynn, why don't we do that here? And Flynn said, no reason why we don't. And then Flynn tried to gaslight the country and say, I didn't say that at all. Well, yeah, he did. Here's something else that Flynn said from that stage at that crazy convention.
Trump won.
No, he didn't.
He won.
No, he didn't.
He won the popular vote.
No.
He won the popular vote and he won the Electoral College vote.
Yeah, no, he didn't. And then someone else who appeared there, I thought she was kind of exiled to wherever, but I guess not, because Sidney Powell, remember her? She was there and she said this.
As far as I know, this is the first case of abject fraud and obtaining a coup of the United States of America.
Come on.
So it's going to have to be dealt with. It should be that he can simply be reinstated.
No,
that
he can't.
A new inauguration date is set.
No, he can't. That doesn't work that way.
And Biden is told to move out of the White House. And
yeah, right.
And President Trump should be moved back in.
Yeah, right. In your dreams, in my nightmares, in her dreams. Remember that Sidney Powell is one of the people being sued by Dominion Voting Systems for like $1 billion or something. And in her defense, her lawyer and she herself even said, no one's going to believe me. What I'm saying is not real. It's like the, oh God, who was it? Some now former senator spouted off lies from the floor of the Senate. And when he was called on it, his spokesman said, well, that wasn't intended to be a factual statement. You presented it as fact. It was. So Sidney Powell's defense is, don't take me seriously. That, you know, that's nuts stuff. That was her defense. And she's still spouting this crap. So this is where we are. These are the people who are attacking our democracy, who are leaving us wondering, can we survive? Who was it?
John Kyle.
John Kyle of Texas. That's who it was. John Kyle's office. That wasn't intended to be a factual statement. Anyway, Arizona. Oh, that's right. John Kyle of Arizona. What would I do without him? You see how lucky I am? I have a smart husband because my brain is fading in my old age. Anyway, So they are actively working to destroy what's left of this very fragile democracy we have. And that's where I want to bring Harvey J.K. in. So because I'm not the only one saying it. This is everywhere. Everyone's asking the question, can we survive? And you had Joe Biden say the democracy is in peril. It is. So let's get Harvey.
Where is he?
Where is who?
Where is Harvey?
Oh, you mean Harvey J.K.
Yeah, Harvey.
Well, he's coming up right now on the Nicole Sandler Show.
So Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice at University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and historian and author of many, many books that you should be reading, including The Fight for the Four Freedoms, Thomas Paine, books about our history. So, Harvey, are you as concerned as the rest of us are about whether or not our democracy can survive?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll start by just saying, and by the way, hello. Nice
Hi.
To see you.
Nice to see you too. Always nice to see you, Harvey.
Yeah, I'll start off by saying, and I wrote about this maybe at the very outset of the Trump administration, that we'd already seen 40 or more years of creeping authoritarianism. Mm. Let's not forget that. So
right?
Between the corporate ambitions of Wall Street and big business and conservative ambitions to turn back the clock, whether it was to 1950 or the 1890s, already the achievements of the 30s through the early 70s, that is the achievements of the New Deal years of FDR, of the better part of the Great Society years of Lyndon Johnson, and also even the better part of, yes, the Eisenhower years, which did see certain very significant progressive advances by way of the Supreme Court, by way of electing liberals and so on. When you think about it, what we saw for all those years before Trump's victory was an assault on the democratic achievements of labor, mm-hmm. of women, mm-hmm. and people of color. And then Trump, represented by the fluke of the Democrats choosing the wrong candidate in the face of American anger and desires to do very progressive, if not indeed radical things, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania went to the Republicans.
Right.
So, and then, of course, fortunately, in 2018, the Democrats were able to at least win the House, which at least prevented the Trump administration from pursuing all of its ambitions, and the Republicans from literally giving the entire show away, you might say. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, yes, now we have obviously a Democratic president. We have a Democratic legislative branch, though
barely.
And tragically.
Very barely.
And yeah, I was going to come back, and that's what I'll come back to. And tragically, a very conservative Supreme Court. Uh-huh. And I can tell you in the last few weeks, and I can never remember quite when the last time we spoke, but I can tell you that it was a real sort of like terribly, you know, ice bath, you might say, to see that the Supreme Court will be taking up once again the question of a woman's right to choose.
Right.
And when you, and that came in the wake of any number of other sort of terrible news stories. So here we are, months into the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. And finally, Biden, maybe as a, you know, they'll probably write it off as a mistake that he made the remark. But I think for the first time ever, instead of it being a gaffe, it was meant to be a signal when
Which
he
one?
Said, the cinema and mansion.
Oh,
remark.
Yeah. I, okay. You know, here, let me play that again because it was pretty awesome. This is what he
yes.
said.
I hear all the folks on TV saying, why doesn't Biden get this done? Well, because Biden only has a majority of effectively four votes in the House and a tie in the Senate.
Woohoo. And
two members of the Senate who vote more with my Republican friends.
Yes, they do. And you hear the right. crowd go, mmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to say, I'm not going to let Biden off the hook on this, but let's leave that for a little
okay.
while later. And let's be careful about this. And that's what that statement on the part of what, 100 political scientists, American political scientists.
Yeah. And so I didn't even get to that. So,
oh,
right.
Sorry.
So, no,
right.
That's okay. Cause I was going to talk to you about it. So this statement of concern was issued yesterday. The threats to American democracy and the need for national voting and election administration standards. And it's a letter. It says, we, the undersigned, are scholars of democracy. I like that. That's how they present themselves, but it's a group of at least 100 and growing people yeah. like you, political scientists, professors, people who,
I actually didn't know that this was an initiative underway. And I can tell you, for anyone who's wondering why maybe they didn't contact me, it was basically all built around the sort of what's that called? The Center for
Center for American Progress? CAP?
No, that would have been that might have been not even as bad as the one that did.
Oh, really?
The ones who organized it. Let me just find
this newamerica.org. And
that newamerica.org was a think tank, in quotes, that was
right.
set up some years ago to be a centrist operation.
Okay.
I mean, a centrist operation. And so they have the likes of Michael Lind long associated with it. And Michael Lind is the kind of guy who was way over on the right. Then he moved to the near right.
Okay.
And then he pretended to be a lefty, which he never was. I mean, it's a real odd crew. And Anne-Marie Slaughter.
Right.
I mean, these are centrists.
Right. But David Ferris is on there, who was on the show with me on Friday, and he's a good guy. He's one of us,
yeah.
I believe.
No,
so,
no. And there are some,
there
very
are some good,
good
ones.
I know his name,
yep.
Jacob Hacker is on there
yep.
from Yale.
Right. Yep.
I'm
he's
not telling you
show.
These are bad people. These
right.
are good people.
But more center
too,
than
but
you.
Too many of them have a story of being centrist at
gotcha.
Best.
Gotcha.
Francis Fukuyama is on that list.
Okay. I don't know
okay.
Francis Fukuyama.
I mean, he was the conservative who first declared that we had reached the end of history.
Okay.
That's back now, what is it, 30 years? Holy
okay.
cow, it's 30 years
before
ago.
My time.
Yeah, he made, and by the way, it was a project that was launched in the pages of conservative magazines and then underwritten by basically Crystal and those Irving Crystal and those folks. basically because they wanted to declare the end of history since the Soviet Union was collapsing. But what they said was, you know, there was no alternative to the world that now will prevail, basically liberal or capitalist democracy, which was basically to write off the whole project of social democracy.
Okay.
So this is the kind of crew that's in there. I mean, these are not people that would readily ever call me to do anything.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
But nevertheless, it's telling.
Because you're a radical. You're a radical liberal. Right.
I'm a democratic socialist democrat. Right. And
FDR Democrat, though.
An FDR Democrat, which Bernie should have said last time around.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, but it's important that they made this statement because it is undeniable. It is undeniable when you've got Republicans who not only were prepared to trash the outcome of an election. Okay, a November election in which the Democratic candidate won by a major popular vote victory, though tragically his opponent also secured more votes probably than any loser ever did.
That's true.
Okay, yep. That's first. Second of all, the fact that the Democrats themselves ran a terrible campaign.
Yes, with the wrong candidate for the wrong reasons. But
right.
Okay.
But what I want to say is, however, they ran a terrible campaign because they utterly failed to bring in more seats to the Democratic side of the aisle, you know?
I know.
And by the way, it wasn't necessary. And the reason perhaps was that, basically speaking, forget the Bernie question, perhaps, is that they went out of their way to appeal to Republican suburbanites.
Sure.
Okay. And really what it showed in that election is people were utterly sick. Moderates and Democrats and liberal left and even leftists were utterly sick of the Trump years, and they would vote for the Democrat, period.
Right.
Okay. And they did that, but they didn't necessarily come out in large enough numbers to turn out this Democratic Congress. So here we are.
Well, they did. They didn't vote down ticket. They voted against Trump.
Right.
Thank God.
Right. Right. And then they told us that if they could win Georgia, heaven would descend and open, you know, the flood. Everything would be great.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Which wasn't true at all.
No.
Okay.
But better than if the Democrats hadn't won in Georgia.
Absolutely. Right? Don't mistake what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
My point is that it took him months to finally get to that moment where he would say, A, don't blame me. We've got two Republicans in the ranks of the Democrats.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then he says, you know, that people say, why don't I do something? Well, my point on all this is the following. Yes, if you believe absolutely that the likes of Chris Coons, that how they pronounce his name in
Coons.
Delaware?
Yes, Coons.
If you believe that those people are any different than Sinema and Manchin, you have to believe that.
Well, the difference is Chris Coons will do whatever Joe Biden tells him to do.
Well, then we have to worry all the more about Joe Biden, because don't forget, six Democrats voted against the $15 an hour minimum wage.
And the two from Delaware, the two from New Hampshire, and of course, Manchin and Sinema.
Right.
That's
so
the
what
six.
I'm getting at is this. While I'm not hopeful. Mm-hmm. Believe me, my hopefulness is worn. I'm pessimistic.
Okay.
Seriously.
That's not good.
Because I have great hope in the American people doing something possibly, but it's going to take Biden to help instigate. And here's what I mean by that. Look, Manchin and Sinema are not going to. He's not going to flip them merely by saying they vote for Republicans.
No, that might have been ill-advised because he's poking the monster.
But so the question, there are questions that I can't answer, but I'd love to know. A, has he ever sat down with them and offered them a deal?
Well, that's what I've been saying. Yes. What do you need? What do you want?
What do you want to guarantee your political careers in the future?
Pull an LBJ. We keep talking about FDR. Yeah. He needs to learn some lessons from Johnson, who was notorious.
And by the way, FDR also knew how to deal.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, he knew how dangerous Huey Long in Louisiana was, And once he realized that fully, I believe there were certain kinds of funding that was not made available to Huey, but made available in other ways. Mm-hmm. Okay, one. Mm-hmm. Two, in 1930, I think it was 36, FDR actually didn't back the Democrats in Wisconsin.
Really?
He was going to win big, and he wanted to make sure he won big. And he lined up with the La Follette family here in Wisconsin.
Of course. And they fighting Bob La Follette. Right.
Right. They were. Well, that was the father. So he had passed away and the two sons, Bob Jr. and Philip. And basically, he was clear about it. He was going to support what used to be called the Progressive Republicans. They weren't. They were no longer in the Republican Party, but they were still called the, you know, progressives.
Okay. Right.
Right. OK. So what has Biden done? Along those lines. And by the way, that's the sweet rendition of a deal. How about the ugly rendition of a deal? And that is,
you get
if you're going to screw my administration, then maybe we ought to screw you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's the other side of the coin. What right, can we do for you? What does West Virginia need? I was talking about this yesterday. You want factories to produce solar panels? We'll bring you into the new green economy.
Right.
We can retrain all of your coal miners and stop with the mining crap. But on the other hand, if you don't do this and take the wonderful riches I'm about to bestow upon you, we are going to take away every bit of economic stimulus that your state gets. You're enjoying the help with your whatever it is.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed, but the Republicans issued their own infrastructure plan.
Oh, did they?
Last week.
No.
Decidedly smaller than
that was the 500 and like the under $600 billion infrastructure.
Yeah. Okay, did you happen to notice who the spokesperson for the Republicans was?
Yeah, it's Shelley Moore Capito, the other West Virginia senator.
Basically, the Republicans were what they were doing is, if Biden's smart enough, is that he almost was handing the Democrats a deal. They were handing Democrats a deal because if the Republicans are going to screw their own, if she wants to screw the state of West Virginia out of, billions of dollars, let Manchin step forth and say, on behalf of the people of West Virginia, I support this plan. And by the way, I'll go a step further. Let's kill the filibuster.
Yes.
Right? I mean, he'd be the hero of the Democratic Party. Yep. He could write his ticket in the Democratic Party. And the people of West Virginia, remember, it's not like a vote on abortion.
Right.
It's not like a vote on what it's a vote on is, are we going to get the resources we need to provide jobs and modernize our state
so we can get some work done so that the Senate is not the graveyard of legislation, so that bills can actually get passed, so that the party who won the election gets to make the legislation. That's how it's supposed to work. And the average person, I'm sorry, the average person in West Virginia, pardon me for saying this, does not even know what the fucking filibuster is. They don't. They don't care.
I can't endorse such.
I'm talking about the average. All right. I don't want to disparage people who live in West Virginia. I know wonderful people. Robin Kincaid lives in West Virginia.
Hold on. Let me remind you of something.
Yes.
There are a lot of very gutsy people in West Virginia.
That is true. They live there.
A few years ago, it was the in the wake of the Chicago teachers union strike. It was the West Virginians who don't even have the rights of a Chicago teacher, who literally walked out in mass to force the question of, will you fund education properly to the legislature of that state? So, look, I don't think the people of West Virginia are as bad as the Republicans they elect. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
Yep.
And maybe and let's not forget, I said before, 45 years of business and conservative Republicans literally going to war against the achievements of the 30s and the 60s. But let's also not forget, it could never have happened if the Democrats hadn't bowed to the Republicans.
Yeah.
There was no fight in the Democratic Party, because had there been a fight, we'd have a different history today, a much different history. So in West Virginia, they basically saw people abandon them to opioids and right-wing nut jobs in the Republican Party.
Right. And now we're here. Here we are. So Robin Kincaid is my only friend who lives in West Virginia. I'm sure we have some listeners there, but Robin's been on the show and we've had the discussion many times about, you know, that Joe Manchin is the only, and I'm doing air quotes, Democrat who can get elected in West Virginia. What that tells me is we need more Democrats from other parts of the country so we're not dependent on his vote, because he's going to vote with the Republicans. I mean, his answer the other day to a reporter who asked if they're going to stop this January 6th commission, would that be enough to make you say, let's suspend the filibuster? And he's like, I'm not willing to destroy our government.
Well,
the government's destroyed.
Here's what Joe Biden needs to do.
Yeah.
Here's another option, okay?
Yeah.
Look, Joe, are you worried about – when's he up for re-election, by the way? Is it
Manchin?
22?
I think he just was re-elected, wasn't he?
Right? That's what I was thinking. So how about – you can Google that while I'm talking. Yeah. I'll talk long enough. Uh-huh. How about this? How about, Joe, if they screw you in West Virginia – you'll get a cabinet position or a prime ambassadorial position.
Ambassador. Sent him off with Rahm Emanuel. By the way, his term is up. He's up for re-election, let me put it that way, in 2024, same as Kirsten Sinema.
Oh, we've got to wait all the way to 2024.
Got to wait until 24.
Hmm. Oh, well.
Yeah, with for her too, which really sucks because I want her out now.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is Biden now has to take the next step. If he can't make them work, then he's got to go one step further. He has to literally call out American working people to say, and he has to point a finger at the likes of Manchin and Sinema in the short term and say, these people are keeping you from a $15 minimum wage. These people are keeping you from better jobs. These people are keeping you from riding on better roads. These people are keeping you from free public community college. I mean, whatever it takes, just literally target them.
Right.
You know,
he's got to do something.
If he's going to fail anyhow, he's going to lose.
Right. Can you send him a book about Johnson? You know, give him try to give him some Lyndon's testicular fortitude. I mean, Lyndon Johnson whipped his dick around at people.
Well,
he intimidated the hell out of them.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I think
which you can't do today.
Have we talked already about the fact that both Obama and Biden held meetings with a committee, a cohort of historians when they first got elected?
No.
Okay. So Obama had all the wrong people when he did it.
Of course he did.
Of all the wrong people. And then Biden did the same thing. They weren't as bad as the Obama historians, but he didn't get anyone in the room who would tell him. They all told him, go big. Well, of course, go big. You'd have to have been an idiot not to know
right.
that. But I don't think a single one of them was up to saying to Joe Biden, if you're going to succeed, you're not going to do it merely because you're president. You're going to have to be a president like FDR. And at times, that is, you're going to have to call out Americans to get organized and mobilized and push. And sometimes you're going to have to act like LBJ. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to break arms or at least twist arms to make things happen. You're going to have to threaten, give them a carrot or a stick kind of option.
Right.
Okay? So I think that, you know, look, let me come back to, have we not talked about John Meacham?
We did talk about John Meacham last time.
Okay, so keep this in mind. You and I both read his remarks these last several days, you know, at Memorial Day, at Tulsa, and elsewhere. And they were very nice remarks.
They were.
But by the way, when I call remarks nice, I'm not being terribly complimentary.
No, okay.
Because what it means is that he's still being, it's like, John Meacham is writing his speeches.
Yes, he is.
I prepared when I knew we were going to talk. I went back this afternoon. I took an hour of my time and I watched the documentary, The Soul of America, that was produced for HBO. And it's all very sweet, but it's utterly empty of what history needs to be for the sake of our fellow citizens. History is not like he says, well, you know, we've faced these kinds of situations before. And it's as if somehow we've discovered the better angels of our nature, as Lincoln would put it. And, you know, we chose the right one. But they're missing the point. Whether it was 1776, 1861, or 1933, it took struggle. It took struggle to make things happen. Now, it wasn't because we elected the right person. Yeah, we elected the right person, perhaps. But more importantly, that person knew nothing can be won. I'm quoting now from A. Philip Randolph. Nothing can be won without struggle. That's also Frederick Douglass. Talk to African Americans. It wasn't like people were nice and therefore we transcended things. Look, in the 30s, workers had to go out on strike against corporations. Poor people, as in the unemployed, had to march in city centers to make things happen. In the 60s, civil rights activists and African Americans and their white allies had to march to make things happen. Sure. It wasn't because we discovered the soul of America. It's because we had presidents, in the case of FDR, well, the case of Lincoln, FDR, and even LBJ.
That's right.
Who knew that unless he had the support of people in the streets, he could not make, in the case of LBJ, civil rights happen. Mm-hmm. If he didn't have unionists out there, he could not make the National Labor Relations Act work.
And,
you know?
Okay, and I gotta jump in here because I haven't had a chance to talk about this, but Tom Perez, Barack Obama's labor secretary, who then Barack Obama fought to make the DNC chair instead of Keith Ellison. That was a contentious fight. He just accepted a job at this law firm, Venable, I think it's called. It's the biggest anti-union law firm in D.C. They actively work against unions. And so he just took that job. And that's its claim to fame. It's anti-union. The labor secretary for Obama.
Hey,
and now he's talking.
That's the Obama story.
And now, one more thing. Oh. Now he's talking about running for governor of Maryland.
Governor, right. And by the way, I think it's the guy who's the chief spokesperson for Amazon right now, came directly out of the Obama administration.
Yes, he did. Yep. It was Jay Carney.
The Obama years, you know, and people don't want to hear it. The Obama years were a failure when it comes to progressive action.
Yes, they were.
Oh, yeah. I won't deny the importance of Obamacare for the sake of covering people
Me.
With pre-existing.
Hello. Right. Save my life.
And for raising the age under which children can be covered by their parents or
there was some good came out of it.
But it is the case that it's not what he ran on.
Yep.
And basically speaking, in so many ways, Obama betrayed working people. In fact, he betrayed working people. That's my view.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue
that
with
as a
you.
A whole half hour thing.
We
sometime.
Could. And yes, the fact that he left us with depleted everything, not what Donald Trump accused him of. It wasn't a depleted military. It was a depleted Democratic bench. There was we lost seats. That's not what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to build the party and he didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
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 So there you go. So with Biden, Biden and his team supposedly learned the lessons of Obama.
Some.
Well, one of the lessons has to be don't assume that you're going to make history by being as president unless you do what Bernie did, even though he didn't make to the presidency. It's called hashtag not me, us.
Right. That's right. Not me, us. It's about involving the people because the president can't do anything alone. And this is the kind of thing that Obama used to say, but he didn't walk the talk. He just talked the talk. He would say, make me do it. Yeah. You don't give us a chance to. You bring us in. That's why Bernie was so successful.
How many people remember that before they even pushed the Affordable Care Act, they cut deals with big pharma and big insurance?
American health insurance plans, AHIP. The public option was, I used to say, he took the public option off the table before the table was even set.
Right. And by the way, Biden has taken it off the table right now.
Not only that. He's not only taken that off the table, he's also, he campaigned that he wasn't going to do a $50,000student loan forgiveness, and now that 10 is gone too.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine that it's Chuck Schumer who's become the champion of debt forgiveness.
Yeah, that's wild, just because Chuck Schumer is up for re-election.
Right.
And he's afraid of getting primaried from the left, which he should be.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think we may be overly optimistic about that possibility.
Yeah, well, not ready yet.
Especially when we see what's going to happen in the New York City mayoral race.
Oh, boy. That's another story entirely. And we're getting close to the end of the hour. So, yeah. Harvey J.K., in 20 seconds, will our democracy survive?
It will survive if, first of all, they can get through a major, no compromises on the infrastructure plan, and build into the infrastructure plan certain kinds of things, even if it takes executive orders having to do with health care and with labor workers' rights.
Love it. Harvey J.K. Find him on Twitter at Harvey J.K. and here occasionally on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Talk to you soon, I hope. Don't hesitate to ask.
Thank you, Harvey. I absolutely will. And it's really... Progressive Voices is done, so now we can talk. I just worry about hitting that mark so that it, like, you know, we don't get cut off.
Are you and I off now?
No, we're still on. We're on my stream. We're just not on Progressive Voices anymore.
Okay.
See, the show continues. Just we're no longer on Progressive Voices because the show ends right at 6. So I always try to do a clean ending. And then if we wind up rambling on, it's okay. We're still on the air everywhere else. But so, yeah, the No, I lost my train of thought.
No, this is seriously speaking. It gets very serious now.
Okay.
I am seriously worried about the future of American democracy.
Yeah.
Because I think that it does hang on the ability, first of all, to get the infrastructure plan through and a willingness to use the executive orders. But even more so, Biden's capacity to mobilize Americans, should he fail to be able to kill the filibuster, mobilize Americans so that they see that 2022 is the short term and 2024 is the long term. But I'll also be a little pessimistic about 2024.
Okay.
I don't know if Biden's physically up to running in 2024.
I don't either.
And I don't know if Harris can beat anyone.
Yeah, I agree with you on both of those. We had a program on Friday. A friendly acquaintance of mine, a guy named Guy Saberstein, a civil rights attorney, retired now, passionately believes that the Republicans are committing harakiri. They're going to kill themselves by 22 or certainly by 2024. He thinks they will not even be in existence anymore. They will have stupidated themselves out of existence. And, you know, what they're doing, I can see that happening. And some people are pointing to yesterday's special election in New Mexico, where the Democrat, it was the seat Deb Haaland vacated to become Interior Secretary. The Democrat won by a big margin, outperformed Biden, outperformed everyone. They were worried that this might portend something for the future, but it's a really good sign. I don't know how much of a sign New Mexico is.
It is New Mexico and not Arizona.
Exactly.
That's first of all.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That's
really crucial. Yeah, I think the thing that we really should keep in mind on all this is in Florida, your state.
Yeah.
Okay. Where Republicans seem to win over and over again.
Yeah, even though we have more registered Democrats, but Republicans rule everything.
$15 minimum wage won.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting at is the Democrats are failing themselves.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
I mean, the question is, will people turn out to vote in 2022? That's crucial. And that's why Biden needs to start calling them out so that even if he can't kill the filibuster, he has got to literally bring people out to save democracy. Mm-hmm. We cannot lose that.
I agree. Well, he's starting to talk about it, but it needs to be everyone's got to. It's we've got to raise the red flag. You got to say this
is DEFCON 1. I don't want to hear any more about the soul of America.
No.
I don't want him to mention a soul of America again. There is no such thing as the soul of America. Okay? If the soul of other than the SOLE, maybe the soul of the, you know, in that sense. I want to hear him talk about, look, I don't mind if he talks about the promise.
Uh-huh.
We've got to live up to the promise, but don't give me any more of this.
Soul
Stop
of America,
talking about God and the Bible and start talking about American history and what it took to get civil rights, what it took to get workers' rights, what it took to get women's rights, and remind people that that has been under siege for 45 years. And if we don't do something about it now, we're fucked.
Yes, you tell him, Harvey, look, you got the applause going because you're on a roll here. I couldn't agree with you more.
Would you remind me of something?
Yeah.
That great little thing that you've ever since we first met, that tape you play, Where's
Your
Harvey?
Open? Yeah.
Whose voice is that?
It's Jackie Gleason.
That's what I thought. I just needed to be reminded.
It's Jackie Gleason.
That's great.
And Boca Brittany Summers.
Sandler Show.
Yes, right.
That's Boca, but it's Jackie Gleason going, "Where's Harvey?" Yeah.
Where did you find that?
Boca did it. Boca made that for me. I said I need an intro for Harvey.
Who's the Harvey that he would have been asking about?
I don't know. I'm waiting for David to come barging in here because he has the answer for everything today.
Okay.
I don't know. Was there a movie Harvey that Jackie Gleason was in, or was that from The Honeymooners? I don't know.
Well, and I don't know of a Harvey in The Honeymooners, but maybe
there wasn't.
There was, by the way, you're not old enough, but you may have heard of the Bob Cummings Show.
No, before my time.
That was like a comedy thing they did.
Wait a minute. Here we go. The Honeymooners, Ralph Meets Harvey on YouTube. Hold on. I'm going to. There was a Harvey. Hold on. Here we go. This is, let's see. Well, here comes David. It was The Honeymooners. Okay, well, I found the clip. Hold on, here we go.
But if you do not let us have this table, I am going in and tell my friend Harvey.
Harvey?
Here we go. Harvey.
Oh, Harvey! You're going to tell your friend Harvey? Harvey! He's going to tell Harvey.
That's not a nice name,
That's
Harvey.
A nice name, Harvey.
I don't care if you tell Harvey. Go ahead and tell him. He's got me mighty scared. I'm shaking a desk.
You better be careful. My friend is even bigger than me.
It's a little guy. You're not watching.
I have a friend Shirley that's bigger than you.
All right. Whoa, there's more. Wait.
Let me just say. All right. I met Art Carney very late in his life.
You met Art Carney when?
Late in his life.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Really?
I think he was retired out to, at least that's where I met him, Long Beach, New York.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I met him there and it was fun. I mean, that's farce.
Art Carney, November 4th, baby. We share a birthday.
Just you and Art Carney.
Me and Art Carney. Yes.
Oh, I. Wow. I share a birthday with two people you'll appreciate, I think.
Okay.
John Lennon.
Ooh, good one.
I don't know how you feel about him, but I love his stuff. Jackson Browne.
Oh, I love love Jackson Browne.
Jackson Browne's a year older than I am, I'm pretty sure.
Have you never heard my interview with Jackson Browne?
No, I don't think I have.
I will have to send
you a link.
I will send you a link. It's posted for anybody who would like to listen. I've got some music interviews posted on the website at NicoleSandler.com. Uh-huh. If you go on the pull down menu across the top, Nicole Sandler Show, and then there's one section that's the music interviews, and there's a great one of my favorite interviews ever
really
with Jackson
good.
Browne.
That's really good.
Yeah. I used to do music radio in Los Angeles.
I didn't pay attention to the interviews that were there. So,
I'll send you that, and I'll send you the Harvey Honeymooners.
Yeah, that's really good. By the way.
Yeah.
So I used to worry. I said, God, my name is it's all these awful uses of it. But then there was a show a few years ago, Suits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wasn't Meghan Markle?
Yes,
on that?
She was in the show. There were the lead, one of the two leads, and he was really he carried the show. This guy, I forgot his name. It might have been a Canadian actor.
Okay.
He was Harvey. He was like this hard ass lawyer, and he carried the show. So he rescued my name, maybe.
Well, now, and Jackie Gleason did too. All right.
Yes. Right.
I'm tweeting at you the YouTube video. So
okay,
there you go. And I will also send you the Jackson Browne interview. Harvey J.K., it is always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And seriously, I'm usually readily available if you need me.
And I will keep calling on you.
Okay.
I love
Thursday
having
afternoons usually.
Thursday. Well, Thursdays is, you know, Howie Klein
Day. I know. That's the thing. Friday is not a good. It's Friday. I do a radio show out of the Boston area and online.
You do
stuff.
With who?
Jeff Santos.
Jeff Santos. He's been around for a long time. So
Jeff
I didn't even
Santos.
Know. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Say hi, Jeff.
I will indeed.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out. You know, because I'm here every day.
Okay.
We'll do it. Harvey J.K., find him and read his books because they're really, really good. Smart guy.
Yeah, good to see you. Thank you. David is your husband.
David is my husband.
Okay, say hello for me for all this information.
You just did.
Then.
You got it.
That's your in-house Google.
He is.
Right?
He corrected me at least three times today, but that's good. You know, here's the note. Supermajority is required to override a veto. Because I said the only time you need a supermajority is filibuster, because everything else is majority rules. And now I know overriding.
Yeah,
a veto.
And by the way, the historians that not historians, the political scientists who issued that statement about the danger of democracy being, you know, the crisis. They have some line in there, which I didn't get at all. It said temporarily suspend the filibuster.
Yeah. Get rid of the fucking filibuster.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Right.
It's nowhere in this document. This is the Constitution. It does not exist in here.
It doesn't.
Not in
exactly.
here.
It doesn't.
Right.
OK, I'm keeping you on too late.
It's OK.
You're an hour ahead of me. I should let you go.
I am. Wait, I got to go make dinner.
We're having sushi for dinner.
You
I should go.
You are.
To.
You're yeah, not we, making we, sushi. You're going
no,
out
no, no.
to
around
sushi.
The corner. At the food store, there's a team of people who every day make sushi. And Wednesdays,
oh, really?
It's discounted. So
we are. Hold on. David wants to say something. Here.
Harvey, you no doubt are aware of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party in Minnesota.
Oh, geez. Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. My dad, when they gave out membership cards, my dad's membership card was 18. Every progressive politician that you can think of that ever came out of Minnesota between 1920, I think, four, and the mid-60s, my father knew because he had factories in Minnesota and because he was such a close friend of Floyd B. Olson, who, not died way too young of stomach cancer, might have been the first president from Minnesota. But
you're not a Minnesotan. You are a Floridian?
I was born in Minnesota. My family fortunately moved here when I was 2 years old, so I didn't have to grow up freezing my ass off. I'm the only one of four children, though, who did not attend the University of Minnesota. All three of my sisters went there. But
well, your family from the cities or somewhere else?
St. Paul.
Okay.
I was born in St. Paul.
We lived in St. Cloud for 1 year up to the northwest of the cities. So.
Yeah, my St. Paul.
But it's only 5 degrees colder in that area than it is in Green Bay.
But you're in Wisconsin.
Right.
That's cold.
That's right. Although right now, what's your temperature right now? I know we're warmer than you are.
It is 84 right now.
Oh, well, no, we might be nearing. We're about the same, I think, actually.
If you talk to someone from Michigan, okay, and you say you're from Minnesota, they go, oh, shit, Minnesota's cold.
Yeah. Well, that's like, sorry, we're all keeping
it's okay.
you on, but
sorry.
If people in Chicago who should know better, when asked, if you ask them, how long does it take to get to Green Bay, which is like, you know, 200, it's like 3 or 4 hours without traffic. They'll say, God, it's like 8 hours away. You know, it's like way up there. Yeah.
Well, that's like we were watching the movie The Heartbreak Kid last week.
And
don't you remember?
Well, I turned it on.
That's the one. Was that the ice? Wait a minute.
That was with Charles Grodin.
Yeah, the heartbreak.
And
yeah,
Sybil
right.
Shepherd.
Right. And the classic line in there that I had mentioned to Nicole before she turned it on was Charles Grodin meets Sybil Shepherd while he's on his honeymoon and falls for her and wants to divorce his wife and marry her. And as they're talking, he asks her, where are you from? And she said, Minnesota. And he said, oh, that's too bad. And she said, why is it too bad? He said, because it's so far from New York, which is the way New Yorkers measure everything, is how far is it from New York?
Yeah, well, yeah, I grew up in the New York area, so I can definitely appreciate that.
Of course, of course. I have a book inside my desk called Minnesota Merry-Go-Round, and the subtitle of it is The Best Legislature Money Could Buy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right, thank you, David.
All I can tell you is, who would have thought the same state that elected that former pro wrestler, what's his name?
Jesse Ventura
became governor.
Jesse Ventura.
Who would have thought that they would then end up going a bit? They would go left in Wisconsin. Whew.
You know, I got to see if I can find it. I interviewed Jesse Ventura years ago. I think during the Air America days. I don't know if I still have that interview anywhere, but I came out of that interview loving him. He was so just. He didn't have any fucks to give. He just said what he thought. And though some of his ideas were crazy, some of them were really good. I'm going to see if I can find that interview because I'd like to hear it again anyway.
Yeah, I'll trust whatever you tell me. I don't want to hear it.
All right, I'll send you the Jackson Brown. That's better.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right, Harvey J.K., thank you. And
bye-bye.
To you listeners, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow. I'm not going to play What's News because it's late and I want to go eat. All right, have a good night, everyone. It's overtime. Bye.